I'm Pat Morrison. On any day, more than 1.5 million Americans live in nursing homes. They are licensed facilities that provide health care. There are also living assistance facilities, too. And while the beds in over 16,000 of these homes remain full, about 1 in 5 nursing homes nationwide were cited for deficiencies last year. We're going to be talking about nursing homes, the promise they hold for older Americans, and some of the problems that they face. We're also going to be talking about assisted living as more Americans transition from their homes, not directly into medical care, but into something in between. We're also taking your calls and comments at 866-893-5722. And we'd like to hear from you on the KPCC blog at kpcc.org. Just click on the Pat Morrison blog. Trudy Lieberman is Director of Health and Medical Reporting at the City University of New York Graduate School of Journalism, was the former director of the Center for Consumer Health Choices at Consumers Union, and has investigated nursing homes for Consumer Reports. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Tell me, first of all, what nursing homes serve in the interests of the elderly and where they may fall down on the job.
Well, there comes a time, I think, especially as people get way old, say into their mid-80s and even older, and we all know that people are living longer now with a lot of chronic illnesses, nursing homes are the place where they can get 24-hour care. And often people do need that kind of care, so nursing homes exist to help those kind of people. And I think we should also remember that what is called the acuity level, which means how sick somebody is increasing, and the number of people who have very high acuity levels are increasingly living in nursing homes. But we also find that nursing homes have they haven't had such a good reputation over the years, and this really goes back to the mid-1960s when Medicaid began to provide a funding source for nursing homes, that they were really looked upon as quite a lucrative business for many of the people who got into them. And with that kind of mindset really came a lot of the problems and a lot of the poor care that we've evidenced over the years.
How has that played itself out?
Well, basically, it's played itself out in the lack of government regulation, the lack of enforcement of the regulation. I should say that the regulations have actually been, or the laws have actually been quite good. We have something called OBRA 87, which was passed during the Reagan administration, which sets a pretty high bar for nursing homes in terms of the quality of care that must be delivered. The problem over the last 20 years has really been one of enforcement and the lack of will to buck the political contributions, the political might of nursing home owners.
Ms. Lieberman, one of the questions that you raised is a point that Laura has emailed us about on the KPCC blog. She says that because of state budget cuts, staff providing oversight to nursing homes and assisted living facilities may only be able to visit a place to inspect it once every 7 years. Are you saying there's a disconnect between the laws that are on the books and what states and federal government can actually enforce?
There can be a disconnect. I do want to say that the federal regulations require that nursing homes be inspected every 12 to 15 months, and this is important for what's called the conditions for participation in the Medicare and Medicaid programs. So states generally try to do that. It is also true that there are state budget cuts and a lot of financial turmoil in the states right now, and that the states are charged with enforcing the federal laws on nursing homes. So there may be a lessening of inspections. But seven years sounds like a long time to me.
What sort of reforms have you found that that the nursing homes nationwide need, and is there a political will to craft those reforms?
Well, as I said before, the law on the books, OBRA 87, is a very good law. And it took a long time for the penalties in OBRA 87 to kick in. It wasn't really until 96 when the regulations were written for penalties. And for a while in the late 90s, the Medicaid agency, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, actually did some enforcement of nursing home regulations. But in the last several years that's kind of petered out. And I think the question about political will is a good one, because the regulators, even if a state wants to enforce the laws of its own state as well as the federal laws, it does run into political pressure from the nursing home industry in a state, which is very strong politically.
I've also read that there are two tiers to nursing home patients. There are maybe two-thirds of them who have some kind of private insurance or private money, and another third who may be long-term care, who may be only on Medicaid, and that there have been stories about evictions of the latter patients to make room for the former ones who may be able to pay more.
This is a relatively new phenomenon. I know it was reported earlier, I guess last week, in the Wall Street Journal. When I was doing my research over a number of years for Consumer Reports, we always knew that that was a possibility, that that was going to happen. But I think in the last few years, it has probably become a reality because nursing homes say they're strapped for funds. It's also important to remember that federal government, through the Medicaid program, and which is also a state-federal program, pay for about half of the nursing home stays in this country. So people often start out paying privately. They either have long-term care insurance, which is a small proportion of people, or the families dig into their own pockets and pay for the care. But if someone needs a very long stay, what happens is that the person ultimately ends up on Medicaid, and I think those are the people who are most vulnerable to eviction.
And just as a numbers assessment, do we have enough facilities to care for the people who are coming down the road who will be looking for these facilities in the next 20 years?
I don't think I've heard much about that there's a shortage of actual facilities. It may be in some rural areas, for example. Someone may not have a big wide choice of where to put grandma, but a lot of these facilities are not full.
We're talking about care for the elderly as part of KPCC's special coverage of this issue, talking about nursing homes, the oversight and regulation and patient care of those, and also about assisted living facilities. We'll have guests speaking on that a little later in the hour. I'm joined by Kathleen Billingsley. She's Deputy Director of Licensing and Certification for the California Department of Public Health. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about the licensing and certification program in the California Department of Public Health.
Well, a couple of years ago, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed some reforms and some changes in these kind of healthcare systems, and for more inspections and perhaps, I believe, higher standards as well. But with budget cuts, it's been maybe hard to enforce it on your end?
Well, actually, we've been in a very fortunate position in that the legislature and Governor Schwarzenegger supported the efforts to go ahead and make the licensing and certification program special funded. So we are fee supported. We receive about 35% of our budget from CMS, and we have a contract with CMS. We work at their direction for the certification visits that we conduct. And as Trudy did point out, we do conduct certification visits at skilled nursing facilities anywhere between 9 and 15 months. But fortunately, here at the state, there is a political will to support increasing oversight and enforcement of skilled nursing facilities and all long-term care facilities. In 2006, we also had legislation that reinstated state licensing visits every 2 years for all of our long-term care facilities. So in addition to the certification visits, we have separate licensure visits. We also conduct about 8,000 complaint investigations throughout the state at all the long-term care facilities. We are required by statute to conduct a long-term complaint visit within 10 working days, and we have a 99.5% compliance rate with that.
So, is California better, Ms. Billingsley, at these things than other states, do you think?
I think that we're very, very fortunate in that the legislature here supports the fact that they not only want us to work under the direction of CMS, but they believe that there are statutes, laws, and regulations that the state has enacted to provide greater protection for individuals in long-term care facilities. And so we are very fortunate in that they have supported that. So we have added actually 200 staff to the licensing and certification program over the last 24 months. Mm-hmm.
Now, one point that you made was about the increased funding from the state lawmakers, almost $600 million. But a UC San Francisco study a couple of months ago said that although a lot of measures had improved, nursing homes were still spending less on direct patient care, and that substantiated complaints of patient mistreatment increased by 38%. How is the state addressing those?
Well, the study that you are referring to was under AB 1629, and that really is a modified reimbursement strategy, and that is under the Medi-Cal program. But licensing and certification is required to collect and evaluate skilled nursing facility nursing ratio data. We have collected the baseline data, and in January of this year, we'll have a report that will be issued to the legislature covering the years 2005, 05, 06, 06, 07. And basically, we will be looking at staffing levels, retention rates, enforcement actions, and the like to see if this reimbursement strategy has improved the stability of long-term care facilities, as well as whether or not the facilities are meeting those staffing ratios.
Ms. Billingsley, I have to ask you, because we don't have much time left with you, and I'm sorry about that, is when people have questions about nursing homes, how they find out how good they are, what kind of ratings they have gotten, whether or not this is a place they want their relatives to be put in, to be living, where should they go? How do they file complaints? How do they find out information from the state?
Well, we launched in March of 2008 a health facility consumer information system under the California Department of Public Health and Licensing and Certification. So the consumer can go on to that particular website, enter their zip code, and we will identify a number of facilities for them. We will also identify and clearly point out the compliance rate of those facilities. We also have other links that provide consumers with guidelines to show them how to select a facility. We encourage people to visit facilities multiple times, if possible, before they select one, so that they are comfortable that their friend or loved one is being cared for properly.
All right. My thanks to you, Kathleen Billingsley, Deputy Director of Licensing and Certification for the State Department of Public Health. And my thanks as well to Trudy Lieberman, the Director of Health and Medical Reporting at City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism. She was the Director of the Center for Consumer Health Choices at Consumer Union. When we come back, we're going to be talking about nursing homes and assisted living. We'd like to hear from you on these at 866-893-5722 and on the KPCC blog.
California Report stories on 89.3 KPCC are made possible by the Evelyn and Walter Haas Jr. Fund, the AARP and its 3 million California members working to ensure access to affordable quality health care for all Californians, online at aarp.org, and by OSH, Complete Home and Garden Service to Californians for over 75 years, ideas, tips, and solutions at osh.com. A gunman barged into the Arkansas Democratic Party headquarters today and shot the state party chairman, critically wounding him. The suspect was later shot during a 30-mile police chase. It's not known whether he died from police bullets or self-inflicted injuries. Bill Guatney is a former state senator and superdelegate to the Democratic National Convention. Moments before the shooting, the man with a gun threatened the building manager of the Arkansas Baptist Convention headquarters 7 blocks to the east. It's not known if those two incidents are related. Court-appointed receiver Clark Kelso has demanded that the state turn over billions of dollars so he can build new medical units in state prisons. State lawmakers have twice defeated a bill to pay for construction, so Kelso's asking a federal judge to order the state to turn over the money. Republican legislators have argued that they've already approved a prison plan. Kelso told KPCC's Air Talk that plan doesn't go far enough.
It simply doesn't do the job. It would build a lot more prison beds, but building prison beds by itself doesn't help with health care. So they've got it exactly backwards.
Kelso is demanding $8 billion over the next 5 years. At the same time, the state is trying to figure out how to close a $15 billion deficit. Governor Schwarzenegger's office says the governor will keep working with Kelso and lawmakers to try and pay for improvements to prison medical care. Checking traffic in South L.A., the 110 North still slow from Slauson to the 10. In Industry, the 60 West slow from Hacienda to the 605.
I'm Pat Morrison. More and more Americans, more and more Californians are going to be needing care in nursing homes and assisted living centers as they age. We're talking as part of KPCC's coverage of health care for the elderly about nursing homes and assisted living centers, what they offer, where their shortcomings may come, and how you find out whether they are good, how you rate them, and what the state is doing to inspect and enforce regulations. We're taking your calls on this at 866-893-5722. And you can go to kpcc.org and send your comments via blog and exchange comments on the Pat Morrison blog. Joining me to talk about his industry, Francis Foy, chairman of the board for the California Association of Health Facilities, a trade organization for the nursing homes of California. Mr. Foy, thank you for joining me.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Ms. Foy, I beg your pardon.
That's okay.
This was spelled to look like you were a he and not a she. I beg your pardon. So first of all, tell us about the nature of the growth of nursing home care in California. There are more patients. Are there more facilities as well to answer the needs?
There are not a lot of new projects being built, but we do have ample beds at this time for the nursing home patients who are seeking placement.
And we have been hearing from Ms. Billingsley about the increased regulation and also the increased money that's available for patient care in California. How is that affecting your industry?
Well, through AB 1629, it's a new reimbursement system. Our old system was really very antiquated. It was a flat rate payment system that paid all nursing providers basically based on a geographic area the same flat rate regardless of the individual patient needs, whereas the new system is more incentive-based, and it's designed to reward the providers for investing in increased pay for workers, improvements in physical plants, and also for enhancing direct services which are provided to patients.
So there have been more requirements and more standards for you, but you've gotten more benefits from those?
AB 1629, actually the new reimbursement system, is actually providing a vehicle for providers to be able to enhance the services which are provided to our residents every day.
Michelle has sent in a comment on the KPCC blog saying she spent a considerable amount of time in nursing homes, assisted living, and board and cares. She says nursing homes are critically understaffed to provide the kind of care patients need. They're being pushed out of acute care far sicker than in previous years into nursing homes, but the staffing has not increased. What are the staffing requirements for nursing homes and their patients, Ms. Foy?
Well, the requirement under the California regulation is for facilities to be staffed at 3.2. Nursing hours per day. And actually, before...
Is that per patient?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And before AB 1629 was actually put into effect, about 77% of all the facilities were staffed at 3.2. But since 1629 became fully funded in 2006, actually more than 86% consistently meet the 3.2 standard. And the actual overall staffing level in 2006 was actually 3.47 for facilities, which obviously then is exceeding the state standard.
We are also joined by Pat McGinnis, Executive Director of the California Advocate for Nursing Home Reform. Ms. McGinnis, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
The staffing question came up in this blog from Michelle. How does your organization regard the staffing requirements at nursing homes?
Well, they're completely inadequate. I mean, they're not safe staffing standards, and we've been pushing for higher staffing levels for a number of years, both in California but also on the national level. Go ahead.
Well, no, where are they falling short?
Well, 3.2 nursing hours per patient per day doesn't mean that you're going to get actual attention of 3.2 hours per patient on every single day. In fact, people don't. We're nursing homes in California are severely understaffed regarding registered nurses, and many of the RNs who do work in nursing homes end up doing a lot of paperwork. The overwhelming majority, 70 to 80% of the hands-on care in nursing homes in California is provided by nurses' aides who have been perennially understaffed, underpaid, and overworked, and also undertrained. We have very minimal requirements for training in California for nurses' aides, and it's just not an adequate substitute for fully trained LVNs or RNs. So staffing is always a problem, and it'll probably continue to be a problem.
Ms. Foy, with the California Association of Health Facilities, you say that your staffing meets the state needs, but Ms. McGinnis is saying the state needs are way too low, the state standards.
Well, the facilities strive to meet the standards, and we do go by the regulations. And I would say, again, reiterate that actually there was a percentage of facilities with the average staffing level, 86% of the facilities staffed at 3.47 in 2006, which is above the state minimum standard of 3.2.
But I have to ask you, would you welcome more hours required, as Ms. McGinnis was talking about, more staffing hours, more nursing hours for the patients?
Well, of course. We would welcome anything that would improve the care given to our residents.
So a change in the minimum requirements is something you would support?
As long as the state funded that increase in staffing, of course we would support it.
Okay. Ms. McGinnis, is that the problem? It's how much money's available to do this?
Well, I mean, the nursing home industry got millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in additional funding, and the staffing levels did not go up. And in fact, the AB 1629 that was referred to didn't include anything about guarantees of more staffing or safer staffing or more training or anything like that. And that, of course, has been a bone of contention with our organization. We're giving hundreds of millions of dollars in new funds to the nursing home industry with no guarantees of better care or better staffing. So I'm not sure. I've been doing this work for over 30 years. I've heard for many years, give us more money and we'll provide better care. Well, we gave the industry more money. And the best that they can say, of course, is that we're meeting the minimal standards under state law. That's not enough. It's certainly not enough to provide good quality of care to residents.
Well, Ms. Foy, this UC San Francisco study of a couple months back points out that even with this new money from the state, the amount that nursing homes spent on direct patient care decreased by more than 3.5%. This is Ms. McGinnis' point.
Well, I also believe that the Vanderbilt study didn't agree with some of the findings of the San Francisco study, but...
Well, we don't want to get into dueling studies.
Exactly. But I do want to say that I, too, have worked in the industry for over 30 years and have been a nursing home administrator all these years, and that facilities do comply with staffing requirements and that they do provide the highest level of care possible for the residents that are entrusted in their care.
Let's hear from you. You're calling from hither and yon. David is in Fontana. Let's see if we can get David here. Hang on 1 second. We'll bring up David.
How are you doing?
Let me see. David, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, David, go ahead,
can
please.
Yeah, you know, my son has been in one of these facilities down here for 10 years. I actually never wanted to get involved. I just wanted to make sure that he was taken care of. But the problem with some of these things is actually the Department of Public Health, they do not know how to read or they do not know how to interpret the rules. And that's where a lot of the problems come from. You have nurses that are in a business, working in a business area, and they don't know how to approach sometimes the directors. The directors walk all over these people. I also found when you were talking about staffing, I'm sorry, but two nights ago, I found out that one of the the section where my son was at, one of the CNAs had 25 patients that he had to take care of. That's too many. I believe that the state, I think they're supposed to have about 15, and this guy had 25. So I don't know. Some, you might say, well, that might be one facility, and I'm saying no, because I used to sell diapers, disposable diapers, to quite a few of these nursing homes, and they're all the same. They all have that same problem of staffing. You can go anywhere in the San Bernardino area. I have no idea about the Riverside or the Northern California, but there's a big problem in staffing down here.
Okay. Thank you very much, David. Pat McGinnis with the California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. David's concern is that nurses are doing non-nursing jobs and that there simply aren't enough of them, as you have said before. What sort of efforts are being made to change the minimum requirements to get nurses to do nursing and to bring more into these care facilities?
Well, you know, actually about 3-4 years ago, we co-sponsored a bill that would have required a minimum staff-to-resident ratios that would increase it well above the 3.2 staffing standards, and it would have graduated in over about 5-year period. That bill was changed to simply change the reimbursement system and give the industry more money. We're still working with a coalition on trying to increase the staffing standards. The industry has had great influence with the legislators, of course, in terms of getting more money, but certainly not in increasing the staffing standards. This is something that we are continue to work on with different groups in California. I want to point out, too, that we do have a website with every nursing home in California and every residential care facility, or what you call assisted living in California, so that people can at least go on there and get an idea of what's going on in individual facilities.
Thanks very much, Pat McGinnis. And I want to go to another caller. Scott in Huntington Beach is on the line. Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the enforcement of the standards when the inspectors are not there. There have been, over the past years, there have been scandals or exposés that have appeared in papers where a nursing home is rated very highly when it inspectors come around, but when the inspector leaves, the patient's often subject to severe abuse sometimes. So what can a person do to assure that when the inspector goes away, that care is still there? You know, for example, could I say just pay a visit spontaneously at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. to see how my relative is, see whether or not they're still receiving what they should be receiving?
Francis Foy, can Scott simply go to a nursing home and see how his relative is doing anytime he wishes?
He should be able. I would still go to let the staff know that he's coming. I mean, they don't need to call ahead of time, but I mean, you would also need to be considerate of the other residents who are living there and the roommate and situation like that. But you should always feel comfortable in any facility that you have your loved one in if you needed to go by and you felt that there was a reason to be there, and make sure that things are going the way they're supposed to be going.
Yeah, this
Pat
is Pat.
Yes, go ahead, Pat McGinnis.
Federal law does allow residents access to their relatives at any time of the day or night.
That is true, absolutely.
And Pat McGinnis, you mentioned your website. This is something, because people have relatives in nursing homes, they know them much more than they might know something, say, about the tax process in the state of California. Is there adequate means for people to find out about nursing home quality and to report problems?
Well, we can provide, and what we do on our website, quantitative data. We have all the citations, the complaints, the deficiencies filed against every nursing home in California, by county, by city, and we also have an 800 number, so that, you know, giving people information on a website is, when you're looking to place somebody in a nursing home, clearly isn't enough, and that's why we have an 800 number, so that people can call us up, go through pre-placement. It's all for free. There's no charge for any of our services, and we can put it into context for them.
Jennifer's calling from Hollywood. Jennifer, thanks for your call.
Hello?
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, Jennifer, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I want to know what part of my... I'm very angry. I've just driven into a parking lot so I can call you guys. I want to know who is regulating these stupid ombudsman programs, because they for sure are not working for the patients. I have complained them several times. They're arrogant, they're stupid, and they feel like they're God, and they ignore you. And I'm in the process of filing a complaint, and if I had the funds, I would file a lawsuit against the ombudsman program.
Jennifer, are you talking about the state of California's official ombudsman?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Called even Sacramento, the head of the ombudsman program, and his royal bloody highness would not speak to me.
All right, Jennifer, let me go first very quickly to Frances Foy. What kind of complaint system is there in the state of California? Jennifer's frustrated. She's not getting anywhere with her questions.
I don't know that I can help her with the problem with the ombudsman, but she should be able to speak to the ombudsman's office. But if not, I would go. Is she trying to file a complaint? I'm not sure who she's trying to complain
against. We don't have her on the line now.
If a person has a complaint, they should, number one, go to the facility administrator. If they have a complaint about the ombudsman, they would need to go to the ombudsman's office.
Okay. And Jennifer, I would also suggest that you go to your state legislator, your assembly member, and your state senator about your concerns about this, too. We've been hearing from you on the blog. Francis says that talking about Huntington's disease families, about admissions of personnel of Medi-Cal certified facility, talking about when the diagnosis of their illness comes and they hear the words Huntington, they say they don't have a bed or can't meet the needs of a Huntington's disease patient. They're clearly violating their contract with Medi-Cal. Francis Foy, this goes to the question we discussed earlier, that patients who have some private insurance have been favored over patients who are on Medi-Cal or Medicare, and that the latter have sometimes been evicted from facilities to make room for higher-paying patients. This was something the Wall Street Journal recently reported on.
Well, I've only had a few experiences with Huntington patients, and I can't say that I've ever failed to admit a person because they had Huntington's.
But in general, the long-term, more intensive care that may only pay Medi-Cal rates versus the shorter-term people who have more insurance.
No, and I've never evicted a patient because they had some disease process that was long-lasting or cost more money or something like that. I've not had that experience. But
Pat
they
McGinnis
should definitely appeal that to the Department of Health because there is a process. If they receive an eviction, that has to go through the Department of Health and the Ombudsman's Office.
Okay. Let's hear quickly from Marty, who's calling from Fullerton. Marty, go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
I'm an estate planning elder law attorney in Orange County, and first off, I want to say what a great organization Canner is and what a great resource it is for anybody who needs information about nursing homes and just elders in general.
Thank you.
But I wanted to comment on when people are looking for nursing homes, a lot of times I talk to clients, and I've been in many nursing homes and assisted living facilities, and when you go in to tour the facilities, they're often anxious to show you their beautiful surroundings and maybe the activities programs that they have, and really those things are not near as important as the staffing they have. Some of the best nursing homes I've been into are very simple and plain looking, but have great staff. And so it's really hard to tell when you're just superficially looking at a nursing home whether or not it is a good home or not. Also, I wanted to mention that one of the most important factors when making sure that your family member gets quality care is how close the nursing home or assisted living facility is to your home. Because if you're down the street, you're going to be able to visit your loved one a lot more often. And just the fact that you're in there and they see you, they're going to be getting better care than if maybe it's the best rated nursing home, but it's on the other side of town and you're not getting there on a regular basis. They're not going to get the same quality of care, it's in my experience, as if you're in there on a regular basis.
All right. Marty, thank you very much. I also want to thank Pat McGinnis, who's the executive director of the California Advocate for Nursing Home Reform, Canner. You just heard a mention of that. My thanks, too, to Francis Foy, who chairs the board for the California Association of Health Facilities. It's the trade organization representing nursing homes. When we come back, we're talking about assisted living in California.
Well, if you're ready, we're about to give away some tickets. It's for a pair of tickets to Beethoven as I Knew Him at the Geffen Playhouse, August 22nd at 8 p.m. First Gershwin, then Chopin, and now the maestro of them all, Hershey Felder, returns to the Geffen to bring Ludwig van Beethoven to life in the final movement of his composer trilogy. Tickets and information at geffenplayhouse.com. We'll take caller number 5 at 626-585-7893. In a lecture today at the University of Southern California, U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Michael Chertoff focused on identity theft. KPCC's Brian Watt was there.
Secretary Chertoff asserted that in the 21st century, a secure identity is the most important asset anyone can own. He said ID theft not only potentially allows dangerous people to access places they shouldn't, like airplanes or government buildings, but it also costs the average citizen in areas like credit card fraud and illegal employment. Chertoff envisioned some electronic device in the future will combine the tools agencies and businesses use separately to verify that someone is who they say they are. He said the government and the private sector can work together on that. Brian Watt, 89.3. KPCC.
There was a 9% increase in the number of recent high school grads who took the ACT college entrance exam. Average scores dipped slightly, indicating more than 3 in 4 test takers will likely need remedial help in at least one subject to succeed in college. Very warm today, near 80 at the beach, low 90s in the valleys, maybe even a bit warmer tomorrow. Taking a look at traffic and commerce, the 5 South is slow and go from Slauson to Norwalk. In Inglewood, the 405 North heavy from Manchester to Santa Monica Boulevard, while the 405 South is slow and go from the 10 to Sepulveda Boulevard. It's 2:41.
I'm Pat Morrison. As part of KPCC's coverage of healthcare for the elderly, we've been talking about nursing homes. Those are facilities that help people who have special medical needs, but there are also in-between facilities between, for example, a leisure world kind of active living and nursing home care, and those are assisted living centers. We'd like to hear from you about your experiences with assisted living centers and your questions at 866-893-5722. And we'd also like to hear from you on the KPCC blog at kpcc.org. Just click on the Pat Morrison blog. Joining me first is Frank Morgan, the Managing Director of Equity Research at Jefferies & Company, which looks into these facilities. Mr. Morgan, would you first define for us the difference between a nursing home and assisted living care?
Well, probably the biggest difference is the level of care that's provided in those facilities. I would characterize assisted living as a light version of traditional long-term care or skilled nursing. Typically what occurs here is you provide residential care for the residents, and you also provide assistance with activities of daily needing, things like bathing, grooming, feeding. In the assisted living setting, there's even a lighter version of that, what we call independent living, where basically you're providing a residence along with just concierge type services, common dining, and basically just providing a setting for people who quite honestly don't want to maintain and upkeep a house. So the other difference would be certainly from a payment standpoint, this industry is primarily a private pay business, which is to say it's paid for from the resources of the individual resident or their family.
So the prices would be perhaps accordingly more?
Well, I think it kind of varies. Certainly, if you look and compared it to a basic Medicaid patient in a long-term care facility, yeah, the payment probably is more than that. But if you compared it to a high-acuity Medicare resident that's inside of a skilled nursing facility, certainly less. On average, I would say the average rate is probably somewhere between $100 and $150 a day. So that would give you an idea of the rate for this payment.
Now, Mr. Morgan, if there are about 8,000 of these facilities in California, are the regulations less restrictive for assisted living homes than they are for nursing homes? And does that allow more latitude, maybe for good or bad, in what kind of services they provide?
Well, you know, I can't necessarily speak specifically to California, but in general around the country, there are different sets of regulations for the long-term care skilled nursing setting versus the assisted living. Remember, this particular niche of long-term care is much newer. Really, if you look at skilled nursing, its origins go back to the 60s with the advent of Medicare and Medicaid. And the notion was the regulations over the years of that business were fairly intense because, quite honestly, the government was paying for a significant portion of it. The assisted living, really the roots and origins of that really date back to the late 80s, early 90s is when that industry really began. And different states take a different view on how it is regulated. But if I had to characterize it very generally, the regulations on this business are less. And the main reason that they're less probably has to do with who's paying for it. It's the individual. Because at the end of the day, the best person to make the choice of the regulation is the person that pays for it. And in the case of assisted living, the individual pays for it. If they don't like the care they're delivering, they go somewhere else. And that's why these companies work very hard to try to make their residents happy.
So who are these companies? And is their interest is really, it sounds like, less about medical care or necessarily even that demographic, but they're providing almost a real estate service.
Well, I kind of view assisted living really as three different components. Yeah, there is a real estate component. You're definitely providing a residence for this person to live in, but there's also what I'll call a hospitality component to it, and then there is a healthcare component. So I think it's kind of a hybrid model where you see all three of those. The people that provide this, we think the way we define senior housing, we think there's probably about 1.5 million units of capacity out there across the United States. This industry is primary. It's a very fragmented industry. It's mostly a for-profit industry. Within this 1.5 million units of capacity that are sprinkled around the United States, for example, we think about 11% of that is controlled by publicly traded companies. The rest of the industry is controlled by mom and pops. There are some not-for-profit entities that are in the business of providing independent living, assisted living, and nursing care. But primarily, it's a very fragmented mom-and-pop for-profit industry.
We have a call waiting from Chris in Pasadena with a point to be made about assisted living facilities. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, Pat. Great topic. And Frank has, I think, done a wonderful job, too. I just wanted to say that there's quite a bit of alternative housing to nursing homes in Southern California, and that would be, as Frank said, assisted living, as well as smaller boarding care homes that are licensed also by the same people that license the larger assisted living communities. And I think a boarding care is a very good alternative, often if a family has some money, to a nursing home monthly.
Chris, thanks for your comment. Frank Morgan, there are more options for people who don't have the kind of health care problems that would land you in a nursing home, and Chris mentions board and care as one of them.
Absolutely. And, you know, within assisted living, to his point, there really are a number of models in terms of just the physical asset itself as well as the level of services that they do offer. You know, some of these facilities are very small. They could be as small as 40 units. Board and cares are probably even smaller than that. But certainly at the low end in the 30 to 40 range facilities, up to where you can see facilities that have several units of capacity. So the size varies. Also, the level of care and the services. Some of these facilities offer very specialized care. For example, for Alzheimer's and dementia care, they focus exclusively on that. And then some facilities, what we call continuum of care retirement communities, actually have a range of services from independent living to assisted living, and actually have skilled nursing care, and may even have a dedicated unit that provides Alzheimer's or dementia care.
Eric Carlson joins us, too. He's with the Assisted Living Consumer Alliance and the National Senior Citizens Law Center. Mr. Carlson, thank you. Eric Carlson, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What I'd like to get a sense from what Mr. Morgan was saying about the range of options available for assisted living. Is that an advantage for seniors to have so much to choose from, or is it a problem that so many offer varying levels, whether it's just a place to live where you don't have to be by yourself, or something that has more intensive care, like, for example, an Alzheimer's dedicated center?
Oh, I think there's some benefits. I think this conversation, though, illustrate some of the downsides. There's a tremendous amount of confusion here. In California, all of these places, we've been talking about, are called residential care facilities for the elderly. The places that you've referred to as board and cares fall into that category, and the places you've referred to as assisted living fall in that category. And so it's very difficult to describe what an assisted living facility looks like, because that includes the mom and pop that provides a very low level of service, and it also includes some other places that accept and retain people that are very similar to nursing facility residents. And that's the regulatory problem. In order to accommodate this great range of facilities, the regulations by and large have been stuck at a lowest common denominator level. And so there's a great deal of vagueness. You would hope, I mean, you can imagine in a different world, people would come in and negotiate for exactly what they wanted and pick up and leave when it didn't meet their specifications. But that's not the way it works in the world we're in right now. And that lack of specificity in the regulations and the confusion lead to a lot of disappointment amongst consumers and a lot of difficulties in providing care. The standards are low. The direct care staffing training standards are 10 hours. 10 hours of training, you can provide direct care in one of these facilities.
Wow. We have a comment from Sharon who says that when her dad had a stroke, they put him in what seemed like a top-of-the-line assisted living home in Palos Verdes. Although the home was beautiful, most of the staff did not speak English, and it became clear that my father and the other patients were not being supervised, and there were hazardous conditions in the home. We complained and were told the facility was investigated and cited, but they remain in business. Is that what you're speaking to, Mr. Carlson, is that there are so many different levels of service being offered by these facilities that no one set of standards will work and the regulation may fall through the cracks?
Yeah, I think that's very illustrative. It should be known that California here is actually far behind the curve. We like to think of ourselves as trendsetters, but boy, in assisted living, we're amongst the last five or eight states. A lot of other states have tried to address this problem and recognize that we really are talking about a hybrid. These are healthcare facilities, or they operate as healthcare facilities to a significant extent. Other states have dealt with that hybrid and brought in more of a medical component, but in California, the state licensing has attempted to draw a bright line down the middle and define these places as non-medical. The medical expertise may come from the outside by some other providers, but the licensing standards themselves don't deal with healthcare at all, and as I said, require no more than 10 hours for someone to start providing direct care. So there's a lot of legislative work to be done to bring us up to where the other states are. And also there's a great deal of consumer advocacy to be done. I want to quickly refer to our website at the Senior Citizens Law Center, nsclc.org, for consumer guides. Regulation is part of it, enforcement is part of it, but there should be no false sense of security amongst consumers. Consumers have to be aggressive, and they have to be smart, and they can't assume that things are just being taken care of.
Let me ask Frank Morgan about the pushback in this industry, because you talk about it being a fairly young industry compared to nursing homes, and that they are often very much driven by for-profit businesses, even real estate considerations. Is there a lot more resistance to regulation in assisted living facilities than you might even find in nursing home facilities?
Well, once again, I think the level of regulations that you see are really a function of who's paying for the bill here, and because the long-term care skilled nursing industry is much more developed and is, for the most part, paid for by government sources, either Medicaid or Medicare, the regulations just go with that. So I think that's the reason that you see this. The other is, and to the gentleman's point, certainly, I think at the end of the day, one of the things that I quite honestly think makes assisted living work and really a great product and a great service is the fact that it's not overly regulated like what you sometimes might see in the long-term care industry. But that being said, certainly, I think consumer education is important. I think there's a learning curve that certainly still has to exist out there. This decision is typically not made, you know, just by the elderly person. It's typically made by the daughter and the daughter-in-law of the actual resident moving in. So, you know, I would just say that certainly there are a lot of considerations here, but certainly being educated as a consumer is certainly probably the most important thing.
Eric Carlson, this kind of living certainly fills a niche for people who may not be capable or interested in living on their own, who certainly aren't ready for the kind of intensive care of a nursing home. Should there not be a different, maybe a lesser level of regulation, given that there is a lot of private money rather than government money going into the care, one patient at a time here?
Oh, no one's suggesting that these facilities be regulated the same as nursing facilities. The point is that they're not regulated adequately, that these are no longer board and care type of facilities. All across the country, the residents that are living in these places every month, every year, are looking a lot more like nursing home residents. Things are clearly moving in that direction. And if we're having residents with care needs that are similar to nursing facility residents, we can't pretend that the regulations of 20 years ago, and by and large, California's regulatory structure still dates from the 1980s, we can't pretend that those are adequate. Not to make them the same as nursing facility, but recognizing that we're looking for a middle ground, And we're dealing with a different animal here, and we need to recognize that rather than treating it as a non-medical board and care type model.
Joanne has a comment on the KPCC blog. She says, for 3 months I lived in an assisted living facility. It was short on staff. The staff was constantly changing. Some staff were not qualified. People sometimes administered medication who were not qualified. Only an LVN, licensed vocational nurse, was on staff. And not all the people could even hear the fire alarm or see the visual alert. Mr. Morgan, if more people are using these facilities for medical as well as residential care, should not more attention be paid to the kind of quality care that's there?
Well, yeah, I think there certainly is a point at which, you know, you probably, the setting is not appropriate, and you know, it sounds like the examples you have here certainly are interesting. Hopefully that's not representative of everyone out there that's received assisted living services, but I do think there certainly is that you get to a point with a resident who's lived in a facility, and I'll just give you some numbers here. The average resident, just over the past 10 years, the average age of the resident has gone from about 83 years old as an industry average up to about 86, 87 years old. So the residents that are in these facilities are definitely aging in those facilities, and you would certainly think that the level of care they need would be going up over time as a result of that. But remember, you know, these people stay in these facilities because that's really where they want to be. It's their home, and certainly, you know, in some cases, if you ask them, in certain cases, there certainly are instances where you may want to discharge a patient to a skilled nursing facility, and quite honestly, they might object to it. But, you know, we're just giving one-off examples here and in there, but I think the points being made here are all good and certainly should be considered.
Okay. Corinne is calling from Los Angeles. Corinne, thanks for your call.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, both assisted living facilities and skilled nursing facilities, as has been mentioned, are for-profit businesses. And, you know, caregivers aren't paid nearly enough for the work that they do, and most caregivers work two jobs. So I think, you know, there's a direct correlation between the amount of pay that folks get and, you know, the level of service and quality care that the residents get at the facilities. And I just wanted to know what folks thought about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Corinne. Eric Carlson, is that the case? You think that's one of the things that could help change quality care?
That's certainly one of them, and that comment, as it suggested, applies across the board in assisted living and nursing facility. The point was made earlier that staffing drives a lot of quality, and if you aren't willing to pay people and treat people as valued employees, you're not going to get good employees. They're not going to stay. So the training standards should be higher. There should be better career paths, and the pay should be better.
Eric Carlson with the National Senior Citizens Law Center and Frank Morgan with Jefferies & Company, thank you both very much for being with me. Thank you for all of your calls and blogs. KPCC's coverage continues tomorrow. We're going to be looking at Medicare and whether it is in need of reform with an eye to the baby boomers getting older.